And I hope over the weekend everybody has taken just a little bit of time to honor the servicemen who gave their lives for our freedom over many, many, many years, and also to honor those who are fighting for our freedom today. And, you know, it's really that whole concept of honoring our ancestors and honoring the people who have gone before us and honoring people who have died. And, you know, we always say that spirits live on, and we feel that, and most everybody does, whether you're willing to admit it or not. Interestingly enough, genealogy, you know, has become a part of religion since biblical days. Those who are familiar with the Old Testament know that pretty much the whole Bible is written on the genealogy of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and so forth, and the begats, and the begats, and the begats. And interestingly enough, as time went on, and even going back to ancient days, most of the ethnic groups from all over the world had what they called rituals that they did for their spirits of their ancestors. And I mean, this goes on, as we know, with Native Americans in Hawaii, in Japan, in China, pretty much all over the world. You know, people have, you know, performed some sort of ritual to honor their ancestors. And we're going to discuss this a little bit tonight. I've got a really exciting guest who's very familiar with this topic. Her name is Helen Radke, and she was born and raised in Australia, and she has been living in Salt Lake City since 1984. She's a professional researcher, and she specializes in religion and genealogy. She is a published writer, a volunteer college writing coach, lecturer, minister, spiritual consultant, teacher of metaphysics, prayer therapist, and past life therapist. Welcome, Helen. I am doing great. And you?
Doing fine. It's a lovely Memorial Day.
It certainly has been.
It's a marvelous time to speak about this topic. Thank you very much for inviting me to talk about it on Memorial Day.
You're quite welcome. So one of the things that you say is that, we're all just, new growth from an old tree.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So, let's talk a little bit about the honoring our ancestors, honoring their spirits, and, what the real importance of this whole process of genealogy and learning about those who came before us.
Well, there's a couple of ways we can look at it. We can break it down into various components. We can look at our personal journey through our ancestry. We can look at our connection with our ancestors and what goes on there, as we can more or less fulfill the bloodlines. We bring the ancestry forward each generation. We can look at ways of connecting to our ancestors and how that benefits us and also our ancestors. We can look at, ways of looking at genealogy to make it extremely useful, because I believe the more we know about our ancestors through the genealogical process, the more we understand them, we gather data on them, can go back and get pictures, census records, you name it, can gather genealogical records and historical information, and we can learn about them. And in learning about them, we can understand where they were coming from and it better. And in understanding that, we can get a clearer picture of how we were affected by our ancestors. So we would start with the first line, which would be our parents, and then go back. So I think there's a few ways of looking at it, but I'd like to look at the personal aspect first. And also, before I forget, just going back to something you were touching on earlier.
Yes.
I think that we can, I won't say pray in the sense of worshipping our ancestors, but we can connect to them through a form of prayer, and we can send them good wishes We can pray for them. We can make that connection with them. Just because they have passed on doesn't mean that we can't connect with our ancestors. You already talked about various cultures and religious traditions that honor that part of remembering the ancestors. So I have an Asian line in my family, a granddaughter about to be born in 2 weeks. And,
oh, wow.
And my daughter-in-law's parents live in Japan. So, you know, that's part of my family. So I'm familiar with some, you know, traditions like that very, very much honor the ancestors. They wouldn't dream of putting grandmama in a nursing home. Grandmama, you know, the family's taking care of each level. Anyway, that's slightly off the point. But getting back to the personal journey, the way I understand ancestry is looking at it from an evolutionary point of view. Now, that's not necessarily a put-down of our ancestors, because their heritage, their wisdom, their cultures, their knowledge, what they had is very important. But I like to think that from a spiritual point of view, we are not just the physical creation of our parents, we're also their spiritual creation. And our journey in this life began from the position of the truths of our parents. And from that point, we more or less go on our own voyage of discovery. And I think our parents, for me personally, I can say that any issues that my parents had, things that were unresolved, that it's like the next generation winds up and carries forward. It doesn't always go as smooth as silk, but on the other hand, there's a purpose for each journey and a purpose for why we're in a family, born into a family. But I do believe it's very important to respect where the ancestors were coming from. I remember when, after my mother passed over in 2001, she knew I had been researching a family tree since the early 1970s. And I'd only gone back about 4 generations on her mother's line. After she died, I got this information coming through, and I knew it had come through my mother, and I was able to go back to the mid-1700s on that side of the family. So I got 1, 2, 3, 4, about 5 generations back, and I found out that we came from convicts on both sides in my mother's line, and it was the both grandparents were shipped out to Tasmania from London. And I remember when I told my twin sons, and they said, well, why does it have to be convicts? Couldn't they have been successful? But I don't see it that way. I see that they came to a new land. They literally lived on a dirt floor. They worked very hard. We were born in that location, you know, because of those ancestors, and they did a lot of positive things, but there was a tremendous amount of lack, and then there were Irish convicts, Irish free settlers on my dad's side of the family. Those were the Catholic side, whereas my mother's were Protestant on both sides. They come to Australia, you know, poor as church mice. And so there's a lot of belief there in lack, and I think being able to identify with possibly patterns of beliefs that that these people inherited or they had because of their circumstances, and to not carry those patterns forward is important. It's up to each individual how much work we do on ourselves personally to iron out any quirks or patterns of behavior that are redundant or releasing fears that we may have inherited, you know, through genetically or through our home environment. But that's looking at it one way. But I think it's very important to not be overly critical of our ancestors, to understand that they are our ancestors, they are our bloodline, and that their hopes, their fears, their limitations, their talents, their gifts, their achievements, all of their human qualities is something that that affects us, that has been handed down and given to us. And I like to think that our ancestry is like a river, in a way, and this sounds kind of gory, but you could call it the river of blood. It's something that moves, and it's very fluent, it's very flowing, and I actually believe that each subsequent generation has got the possibility to transcend or to interpret life from possibly a different perspective, in some cases a higher perspective. I have not been subjected to war to the extent that my parents and grandparents have been, and so they knew a lot of lack during the war years. Yet on the other hand, I've changed countries and done things that they were not able to do and wouldn't have done. And I think that, you know, it's important to understand that people, we create our opportunities, and it's a moving forward, it's a moving forward pattern, you know, of growth. So that we keep, it's like, to me, and I'm going to mention the word redemption, because I live in Salt Lake City, and saving the dead is a hot topic around here. And
yeah, I know that.
It's like there's one way of looking at it and one way only here, and I feel like the lone voice in the wilderness when I talk about this. But to me, redemption involves resolving and a movement forward of the bloodline spiritually. So I've hopped into that aspect a bit quickly, but I wanted to mention that because I do see value in the idea of helping the dead, but not to the point where you go in and tamper with their memory in any way. I think that we can send them love and light and can connect and form that connection. And back to your original question, one of the values of genealogy is that it helps us know and learn more about our ancestors. And in so doing, it makes it easier for us to connect with them because they become known to us. And because spirit can work in many different ways, it's potentially possible once you've identified people that they can make their presence known in your life to help us if necessary. They can. It's not always, it's not for every person to have a guide who is an ancestor, but it may be that some people have that particular connection with someone who has passed on over to the other side, and they are connected with them in a way that helps them move forward. So that helps the ancestor plus the person alive on Earth. So I popped around there a little, but
that's okay. You know, I understand what you're saying because I had a grandfather that died when I was about 5 years old.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, his memory lives with me. And I know he's one of my guides, and I've called on him many a time. And I remember, you know, as vivid as yesterday, you know, sitting on the sidewalk in front of the house. My parents had left in a hurry to go to Savannah. And, yeah, they had somehow told me that he had died, and I'm not sure exactly how they told me, but I think maybe they said, well, he went to heaven or whatever. And I can remember seeing his image up in the sky, and I could hear him talking to me. And, you know, ever since then, I've kind of been somewhat, you know, connected on the spiritual level with him specifically, more so than anyone. You know, when you go to your parents, I mean, yeah, there's been a joke around me and my friends that, you know, when something happens, you know, Elise did it, my mother.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I know she's always around, and I know that, you know, some of the funniest things will happen, and I know it's her, and it always has been. So, you know, the rest are not as vocal as those two in my life. But, you know, the thing that I don't understand, and you know, when I got involved in genealogy, I mean, there was nobody in my family who had ever started into it. Maybe on one line they had a list that they had made of all the descendants, but
mm-hmm.
they had not really looked into the ancestry. And the more and more I got involved in it, the more I just was shocked that there are so few people really involved in this process. Out of, you know, I mean, I know there are lots and lots and lots of people doing it, but when you look at the numbers of the world, it really is something everybody should be doing minimally, just a little bit. Because, you know, every time you find a record, and, you know, that puts you that much closer to that person, whether it's, you know, a vital record,
mm-hmm.
you know, you see the, you know, when they were born. I mean, it's just, to me, it just is an attachment. And every record that I get for one of my family members is a real attachment for me. And I just don't understand, and I guess, you know, now that I'm into it, and one of the things that you said, one of my keys on my website, you know, is find your family, find yourself. And I really feel very, very strongly about that, too, because I know that, you know, that's really, you know, my whole life took a different direction once I started off in genealogy. Totally different path. In any event,
yes, I would agree with that, Susan. And I think that as we discover more about our genealogy and we discover a personal interpretation of our family situation through our genealogy, that a new spiritual awareness can emerge through that. And I think that's very important because we can get attached to groups. We can get attached to religions, we can get attached to many things in life and that can adopt us or we can adopt them, but they're not necessarily bloodline ties. And I think that, you know, we can go in and out of situations, we can change jobs, we can change religions, we can get divorced, but we can't disown our ancestry. And it's very important to realize that. For me personally, I believe that we're born into a certain family for a reason, but that's where I'm coming from, which means that I believe in a type of pre-life or something that went on before we were born where there were decisions made. That's my preference to believe that, based on the fact I don't think we just suddenly came into being on the earth plane, you know, randomly put into like a deck of cards that's shuffled, you know, you can go here, you can go there. I don't think there's any randomness about it. I have a strong sense of that we're put in a certain situation, family situation, for a reason. But again, that's my personal preference, you know, to view life that way. So what I do is then, well, what have I to learn from my ancestry? And I think, too, coming from the perspective of now someone who is older, and one of my sons said that I've been old for a long time, I'm now a lot more empathetic to some of the problems that the family members I had who are known to me and even some of the ancestors that I didn't know, but I know about them, I have their history, I'm a lot more empathetic to what they had to endure and experience than when I was younger. And I think that it's important to realize, you know, if there was someone in the family who drank too much, or who had, you know, problems that were, they're in a negative situation. I mean, there are reasons for that, and I had family members who died in negative situations, but there's always that continuity of hope and continuity of purpose, and it's like carrying the line forward and carrying the torch forward for our ancestry and for our bloodlines, and then balancing out where there may have been any excesses or anything in the past that may be known to us. I don't mean to make it sound that we just have to be crusaders for the family, but I do think there's a purpose, because most of us want to live in love and peace. We don't want to live in war. We don't want to live in poverty. We don't want to live with illness. And I've noticed that in my family, in particularly the generation that I've given birth to, there is less illness than there was, say, on my mother's side, her dad's side. I believe his mum lost 8 or 9 children. I mean, there was just a huge mortality rate among infants in when I go back just a couple of generations on two sides of the family. So there's an improvement there, you know, in quality of life. So,
right. We've had a little bit of reminder of that, I think, with this whole swine flu pandemic, about the flu epidemic of 1918, I think it was.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And there were so many young people that died. And I know I have several in my family that were in their 20s and 30s and got sick and died, 2 days later. So, I don't know about, the empathy that we can generate from, you really have to put yourself in their shoes. And you have to really sense and feel what they were going through. I mean, I keep going back to the stories of the Holocaust, because that's something mm-hmm. that I'm familiar with. And I just, the horrors that, of the stories, I feel it. It's just, it's overwhelming in some cases. And, that sense of really trying to put yourself in their shoes and understand what they were going through, and possibly in some cases have to offer up some forgiveness, is very important. We tend, and you hear about this all the time, that we tend to offer up forgiveness after death rather than during life, and, mm-hmm. and that's a very, very sad thing that we do.
Yeah.
And we all have issues. I mean, there isn't one, I think, that doesn't have an issue with a parent or a sibling or someone that we have not, just really forgiven them for why they are who they are because of what we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And move on. And that really is where the whole health thing comes in, I think.
You're getting back to the Holocaust. I think life is a continuation. It's a continuation of process. And as someone who has helped Jewish groups since 1999 with research that has mainly been Holocaust-centered, not all of it, but I'd say about 90%, I remember developing such an empathy for Jewish Holocaust victims, and having looked at the names of and records connected with, it's hard to say how many, but it would be somewhere in the range of between 40 and 50,000 names, I would say, but I couldn't, pick an exact total. But I would literally leave the Family History Library in Salt Lake City in tears. With bundles of records, because of the type of data I was gathering and the histories of various groups of people in the Holocaust. But one thing I like to say that was very rewarding for me personally, and that was as far as forgiving and releasing, I was honored to be at the news conference that was put on by the American Gathering of Jewish Holocaust Survivors last November in New York City, and was acknowledged as the genealogist. It was actually should have been researcher for the Jewish groups involved. And I remember Ernie Michel and Roman Kent were the two Jewish speakers. Gary Markatov was on the podium a little while, but it was mainly Ernie and Roman. And some of the comments, it was done with so much dignity. There was a young teenage choir, but it was like the experience of Michelle and Kent saying, these were our people, they suffered, this is what has happened, we have this agreement with this particular religious denomination, and there's been some problems here, and, you know, we want our people, their memory preserved, they suffered enough. And even though it didn't stop the process with the church involved, there was great dignity there, and there was a great releasing and letting go by the Jewish people who disconnected from the church they were having problems with at that time. But because the point had been made, these are our people, they suffered, here are pictures of my family. Ernie Michel puts his parents up there, and it was like it was done with great dignity. And the other benefit of the issues that developed around this was that it served as a reminder of what had happened. And I know from putting together just a 61-page report on the Mormon-Jewish controversy, I was able to examine and then put down in paper form what had transpired here, and it brought out some marvelous stories of heroes and heroines of the Holocaust, of groups of people who had possibly been forgotten, like a group of Rome Jews who had been deported to Auschwitz and had been immediately murdered, and there were stories in this. And so it was like, even though there was chaos and conflict, you know, with the religion involved, and a certain amount of came out in the press that wasn't 100% accurate, because the process never really stopped, you know, concerning the Mormon Church and Jewish Holocaust victims. But on the other hand, it gave those of us who have such a strong sense of the wrongness and the brutality and the numbers, you know, the opportunity to be able to bring this forward in a very dignified and loving way, to do as much as we could do to help preserve the memory of the 6 million who perished in the Holocaust. With great respect.
And, you know, that's very important. And I don't know if you really want to delve into that situation anymore. I don't know how many people in our audience may even understand what we're talking about here. But, you know, I know there are many schools of thought. And, you know, from a spiritual point of view, you know, I am who I am, correct?
Yes,
And when I die, I am who I am. So it doesn't really matter who someone wants me to be, dead or alive, correct?
That's true. The only comment I would make to that is if somebody expects you to be something other than who you are, even after you die, to me that is a put-down. And if they say that to me personally, well, why do you care that I'm trying to change you? I will say something. I'll say that's disrespectful. I do not accept that. So I think it's, again, you can shrug it off or just say, well, I am who I am, and what does it matter if someone else thinks I should be someone else, either now or after I die. But to me, it's probably because I live with it, you know.
Yes.
I'm here in an environment immersed in that reality. So I feel like I'm on the defensive a lot on that particular topic. But you're right. It doesn't change anything. You are who you are, and you are going to be exactly who you are and nobody else. And if you're coming from a different reality, if you're coming from a place where you don't think you need to be saved, and then you're not going to be able to relate to ideas that would supposedly save you if you don't believe in that to start off with.
Right.
And that's where I'm coming from. I don't relate to the idea of that at all. So I think that as we, my spin or understanding on genealogy is, as it is with life, is to balance and to learn and to integrate and to move towards spiritual wholeness. And I think that everyone benefits when we do that. We benefit, our families benefit, our ancestors benefit, our guides benefit, and it's good for everybody, and it doesn't necessarily cause strife in people's lives unless we're moving out of old patterns, and it's necessary to cause some upheaval when we do that. You know, we will run into strife as we make changes in life, but not always. But that again is our personal choice.
But when you go back to ancient religion and the evolution of religion over the years, it seems to me that we have lost, and I don't know when you might say that cutoff was, but surely in the last one or two centuries, a lot of the spirituality of the religion, and it's, I don't know. I mean, I'm just, personally, it's more dogmatic for me than spiritual for me. And you know, the whole spiritual sense, and I mean, I see it reviving, interestingly enough. I mean, I'm running around the internet, and, you know, there's just so many people who are really, really, really trying to, finally touch base with that part of them. I mean, I was laughing when I was thinking about the show, and I don't know if you ran into it, but I did growing up. I'd run into somebody, and they said, "Who are you?" And I would say, "Well, you know, my name is Susan King." "Well, who are your parents?" And I said, "Well, they're Elise Norwin." And they would say, "Oh, so you are Elise Norwin's daughter."
Mm-hmm.
So I spent all my life growing up as Elise Norwin's daughter, not Susan King. And so, you know, that whole genealogy perspective, you know, really was, I was them. I was them. I was them. I was not me.
But did that identity help you, would you say, in your own connections and movement forward? Before you got to the point where you really thought you had to emerge more as yourself?
I don't know. I think I was always an I am person. I really didn't like being, labeled as their child, even though I was. And I loved them, and I mean, they were great, great, great people. But I guess I was always looking at myself as an individual with different thought patterns, and I had a lot of different thought patterns than both of my parents. And, and as my mother did her parents. I mean, you look at it generationally, and, the thought patterns change, and it changes due to all the socioeconomic and political things that are going on, both where you are and in the world. And, today with the connectivity that we have, I mean, we could you know, we take trips everywhere all day long. I mean, it's amazing at where we can go.
Well, I think too, Susan, with this information age, there's so much out there we can choose from. And back in even my parents' time, it was unusual for someone to change their religion. These days, you can learn from many different groups. You can study from different groups. You can move around. There shouldn't be a stigma from changing, but in some, you know, with some groups there is, but particularly institutionalized religion. But on the other hand, we can move around, and there's a great mobility, you know, opportunities to be mobile and to learn. Sometimes we may connect with a group or a situation where we get specific knowledge in a certain area. Like I remember about 30 years ago connecting with a movement in Australia that offered connection with spirit guides, what the scriptural term I think is ministering spirits. But that was very valuable for me because it helped me form that connection. These were experiences that my parents never had in the same way that I did, but because of the journey starting off with them and continuing on, I was able to process. And I'd say that a lot of times when I made the biggest discoveries was when I was trying to cope with problems that may have had some links with my family. So I think that, you know, it is a very individual journey. And you did say that you are an I am person, and mm-hmm. and I am is another term for higher self. So it's like, you know, finding out who we are and making that connection. That's why I like to think that we, to some extent, to a large extent, carry the torch for our ancestors. We continue the journey here on the earth plane and embrace opportunities that they possibly never had in quite the same way. If you have a parent like you had that established themselves in a particular area and you were able to benefit from that and move forward and in an individualistic way, but you harness that information, you harness that position, then you're able to move forward with it and benefit. And then help others because you have such a very, you know, a very a large audience. There's people that you help. So, but sometimes we have to break away from old patterns and old structures. And I do agree with you that with spirituality, you have to, at least I've had to look for it. And I've sometimes found it in the strangest places and it has been away from, for me personally, away from mainstream religions, and to get the experience and the connection and the learning and the understanding. But the type of work I do in working with people on a one-on-one basis is help connect them to who they are and work with them to help them find out what they want in life and to assist them to overcome whatever obstacles there are in the way of their success. So that and there's a great need for that, you know, in the world. People are looking to move and to move more quickly. A lot of times they've outpaced their churches and they just simply leave. Again, it depends on the individual.
Right, and you indicated on to your bio that you do past life regressions.
Yes, I do past life regressions. I do past life readings. I started to do those about three or four years ago.
Okay.
If there's a need, because I wanted to make it available for people who wanted that experience. Because I found that I've read for people for about 23 years here in Salt Lake City, and oftentimes, past life information would come through in readings, and So I would make it, you know, available for people to just work on past lives. There's different ways you can approach it. And, you know, I do regressions and I do readings, and there are other ways of accessing it, but those are the methods I use. And what I'm looking for is not so much who a person was and what they did. It's more what are the what is it that they came to do? What goals did they come here, this embodiment, to complete or to process? Where they're at? Just going and accessing information to help them understand their circumstances better. And a lot of times, I'd say in about 75% of the people I read for on past lives, they've already achieved a lot of the goals that they came here this time to complete. There's another aspect to past lives, and that can be the trauma aspect. Some people are simply bothered by that which they don't understand. There may be fear of an element such as fire or water. They sense that something traumatic has happened, possibly in a prior lifetime, so we can go back and look at that and address that issue with the objective of clearing it for them so that they're no longer troubled by it.
Well, I want to just quickly give out a phone number in case anybody wants to call in and have any questions for us. And that number is 888-815-9756. Again, 1-888-815-9756. Going back to, you know, getting, you know, helping people, do you find that when people start off on their genealogy journey that they begin to have some problems or issues that they have not addressed prior to starting this particular journey? Is that basically what you were
yes.
alluding to there a few minutes ago?
Yes and no. I think it helps them understand more why they're having problems, but it depends on to the degree that they are willing to face themselves, because it's been my experience, speaking for myself personally, that I've had to literally go through not just my own ancestry currently this lifetime, but to go back and address past lives and look at some of what I've carried forward from that. And it's because of a sort of a compilation of that, I believe I ended up in the family that I was born into this lifetime. So I think it varies. But because our parents and grandparents are usually more personal to us, and in most cases we knew them, we can identify with the way that they were and maybe see things about ourselves that we did inherit through the family, if that answers your question. I think an increase in understanding and in wisdom and knowledge can come through. But the other thing, too, is... I think it's very, very important to honor our ancestors, because we can't truly honor ourselves unless we honor our ancestry. And I think the more we love ourselves, the more we understand about life, the more we connect with God and Spirit, the more likely we are to love our family and our ancestors. And it's not up to us to judge where they may have been wrong. Or where we think they may have been. It's just to anything that increases understanding, I think, can be helpful to us.
I tend to agree with you on all of that. But, you know, in your genealogical research, and I mean, you've been in Salt Lake now since 1984.
Yes, a long time.
You know, what's probably been the biggest highlights of some of the work that you've done that, you know, brings you great pleasure? I mean, I know that when I do my research, whether it's for me or someone else,
uh-huh.
there are situations that bring me great pleasure because I know that I have touched someone spiritually.
Yeah, on the genealogical, it's when you get a breakthrough when you don't expect it. Something you've been looking for a long time, and all of a sudden there it is, you know, out of the blue.
Yes.
So there's different ways of sort of looking at it. And I think, too, because I read for people, I'm just not looking at the clinical data that a genealogist would collect. I will have a live person come to my door, and maybe they lost a child, you know, who was two, you know, under dreadful circumstances. And in reading it, we try and address, well, what happened with that soul, to give some degree of comfort to the person who's receiving the reading, and also to help them understand, if it's possible to understand, the loss of a two-year-old. And so you've kind of got, you know, family lines being honored constantly, even if it's just, you know, one generation or two generational. I did have an instance about 20 years ago where a woman came from a place called Tooele, which is south of Salt Lake City. Her 15-year-old son had disappeared. She didn't want to hear that he had issues with his stepdad. She was terribly concerned about the son. He'd been gone for 3 days. I told her in the read that he was with a fellow called Jim or Jimmy. She said he didn't know anyone by that name. I said that was all the information I was getting. She called me the next day. The police had contacted her. They found her son with a fellow called James. I must have had half a Tooele come to me for a reading after that. But that was an instance where you had, again, a mother and son, and there was, you know, there was assistance given through the guide. So it's, you know, ancestry and genealogy and family, things can happen in so many different ways. When the door is left open for spirit to move and to help people, in that case, it was reunite, because she got the son back and then could work on the problems. But sometimes, one thing that's common is people will come to me and they'll want to know, is so-and-so okay on the other side, and does so-and-so have any messages? And in the beginning, I was very critical. I thought, well, I'm not going to do the Ouija board routine. But then I learned to trust in spirit and then to allow the information to be fed to me to give the person to help them, and whatever comes through. So I can think of numerous instances where you have family members on the other side and concerned family members on the earth plane, and they're wanting that contact and that connection. And I'll give them a message, and they'll say, well, that sounds like him. He used to talk that way, or something like that.
Yeah.
So different ways of looking at things, Susan.
Yes, it is. I've had several people on the show who have done, you know, similar things in readings, and I've seen some people in action, and it's just mind-boggling sometimes how the accuracy just comes, and you know, boom, 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 fast, fast, fast. I mean, it's like, you know, there's no time to think, so you know that it's coming through because there is no think time available.
That's a very good point.
That's how fast the information comes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all have this ability, and that's one way of knowing whether what you're getting is you know, from spirit or if, you know, you're coming from your intellectual side, is when things just come boom, boom, boom.
And sometimes, too, it'll come through as a block of information, and it will be information that you had no clue about before. And all of a sudden you'll know something, a full realization, and you knew nothing about it a few seconds before. So that's the thing that can be truly astonishing about that. So I think that it's important to leave yourself open to have those experiences, but not open to negative influences, you know, but to tune into that which is positive and positive only.
Right.
Because I remember I didn't kick the client out, but I asked her, I said, I would prefer that you did not have your dead sister with you. Her sister had committed suicide because I sensed she was a negative influence. I said, if you like, I will help your sister and we'll try and shift her. And the person got very offended. She's still a friend. She's still as a client, but sometimes I will put my foot down, you know, and say, no, this is not an influence that's in harmony with what we're doing here. Doesn't happen very often, but it happens every so often. It just goes with doing this type of work.
Yeah. Well, even with, you know, as an individual, I mean, you know, would there be cases where ancestors, if they came to me, would come to me with a negative thing, or would they always
It's potentially possible if you drew them to you. But I'm of the belief that you draw to you where you're at yourself. And usually if they come with something negative, they need something to feed off. Generally not. I mean, it's possible, but usually if you don't want that, it's not going to happen.
Okay. So you don't have to really be afraid of any of those negative influences coming through, if indeed you try to, I guess the word would be channel.
Yeah, I've had some experiences where clients have brought negative influences with them, and there's various ways of handling that, so I don't get, you know, bumped on the head. But again, that's part of this work, and it doesn't happen very often. But you know, there's certain protections that can be used. I think the benefits of connecting with guides and with ancestors is, you know, it far outweighs any potential risk factors that may be involved. I think that, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
As long as you're strong and you know what you want, because whatever you draw to you is going to correspond or mesh with you where you're coming from. And I think if you come from a position of knowing and accepting your own personal power, you're less likely to run into problems. If you're looking for something to build up a sense of false ego, then you may draw, you know, any type of entrapment to you, but there's pitfalls on the earth plane with people trying to say, well, I'm more powerful than you. You see this a lot in religions, but it really doesn't mean that person has got a great deal of power. It's a very individual thing, and you'll draw to you corresponding energies sometimes both positive and negative, but you'll be able to identify with the positive more clearly.
And, you know, I've had a couple situations in my research too where I know that my guides just brought me right to something that I had been struggling with. And you know, one minute I said, okay, this is it. We gotta solve this mystery. And the next minute it was solved. And that has always fascinated me as that it happens. And I really, you know, I wish I had more time during those days. And I do have more time now, and that's what I'm working on, is to really fine-tune that so that it happens more often. It would be really cool. Helen, we are about running out of time. I've got a little bit of house cleaning to do, I think. Speaking of skeletons in the closet, my guest next week is Ron Ahrens, and when he got involved in genealogy, he started exploring some of the questions about why our ancestors acted the way they did. And after decades of research, he has published a book called The Jews of Sing Sing. Should be an interesting hour.
The Jews of Sing Sing.
Yes. I guess we're going to see, you know, the types of you know, people who think crime-related, I guess maybe along the lines of Madoff, who knows. It's going to be an interesting show. I do want to announce that come next Monday, we are not going to be on the air. We are changing the show. We will be on air now starting on Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific time, which would be 12 noon Mountain time. Let's see if I can count. 1 o'clock Central time and 2 p.m. on Eastern Daylight time. And that begins, like I said, next Tuesday, and we'll be on Tuesday mornings from there on out. If you want to get a hold of Helen, we do have her page and her contact information on my website, which is www.susaneking.com. And the site is really dealing with where genealogy and spirit connect. I think that as we grow and we begin to understand more and more about this concept, I think more and more people will start to embrace it. In any event, good night. Again, happy Memorial Day, and we'll see you Tuesday.